You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, October 18th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, from Rolling Stone magazine, Matt Taibbi on Occupy Wall Street, just outed apparently by Breitbart as a supporter of Occupy Wall Street. Stunning work by Breitbart. I wonder if he just got that by reading his blog. We'll talk to him about that. I'm sure he'll have plenty to say. But more importantly, we'll talk about his... he's written a couple of pieces about Occupy Wall Street. And we will discuss both the demands he suggests that Occupy Wall Street embrace and why Occupy Wall Street is bigger than left versus right. That more... Apparently, we are actually going to leave Iraq by the end of the year. United States, it's not just enough that we assassinate an American citizen who makes bad YouTubes in Yemen. We decided to kill his kid, too. That's sweet. That's nice. Jobs bill heading to the Senate. We'll get to that all in just a moment. But first, folks, you have to indulge me. Oh, well, first off, let me just say... please go to podcastawards.com and vote. We've been nominated for Best News and Political Podcast and the People's Choice Podcast. You can vote for us there once a day. Podcastawards.com. Please, it would be very helpful for us. And
also, don't forget that once when you vote, you get a verification email. You just have to click the verify link in that email.
That's right. There you go. So you got to put in your email. They verify it, and then just to make sure it's, because a lot of people, I guess, cheat. And so please vote, support the show. It would be very helpful for us if you were to do so. Folks, please indulge me. Now, I know yesterday, oh, I should also say, you know, we are, I don't want to toot my own horn here. We played that, I guess we played that video. If you are not a member of the Majority Report, you missed the audio we played of was it his name? What was that, that Marine's name? We played a audio.
Shamar Thomas.
Shamar Thomas. We played audio of a Marine Sergeant, I think retired. From the military, Iraq war vet, basically staring down some cops yesterday. Played it on the better half of the show, and hours later, he's on every TV program out there. Just saying, folks, you can be a part of and supporting this program by going to majority.fm, becoming a member. It's only $10 a month, pennies a day, and you can keep the show alive. And also allow me to go on, basically keeps me in the business. And I go on programs and I say things to, like, to Thomas Friedman. I say, suck on this. In a question. That was for me. Also, I'm carrying a message into the mainstream media. You know, Somebody told me the other day they think I'm the most liberal person to go on MSNBC. I don't think that's... That can't be the case. That can't be the case. Maybe during the week, they mean. Chris Hayes show. But you're going to have to indulge me. We'll get to Matt Taibbi in just a minute. You're going to have to indulge me here, folks. I got to play you more from this Victoria Jackson video. It's just so good. You know, we had talked about this some time ago. I got to get her on the program. It would be, would it be a waste of time? Maybe a little bit, but it would be so fun. Maybe we'll do it on like casual Friday. It would be just so,
her and Chris Rosen at the same time, then just your mind will explode.
Actually, that would be an amazing segment. She could give us both movie reviews and also talk this gibberish. Here she is. She's interviewing this guy at Occupy Wall Street. This is on her video. And the guy she's interviewing is just making her look like a total fool. He's not meaning to. I guess she could just have done a monologue. But here's just a clip of that. Just indulge me, folks. It's too funny.
Capitalism.
What would Jesus do?
Hey, Oprah Winfrey had nothing. Now she's a billionaire. That's capitalism.
So we're all just supposed to roll the dice and hope that we become billionaires? Forget about the poor and
okay,
the...
Okay, you want product? Everyone to be equal. How are you going to make everyone equal in good looks and smart brains? Everyone's not created equal.
How do you that's the most inane question I think you've asked. How am I going to make everyone good looking?
Everyone to get the same amount of money, the same college, the same house, the same car.
Don't put words in my mouth.
Okay, what do you want?
I don't think you'll ever have a completely equal system, but you cannot have a system where the obscenely wealthy are breaking the system for everyone else. And I'll tell you why. Historically, if you look at Russia, if you look at France, the French Revolution, if you look at Rome, it has always been when there is such a disparity between the super wealthy and the poor that it leads to revolution. I'd rather not see that happen to our republic.
And then they go on to take photos with Victoria Jackson because they can't believe.
I want to ask you.
One second, let me get my picture.
Okay, were you guys inspired by the thing in the Egyptian protest and the Middle East protest?
Referring to the Arab Spring?
Yeah.
Absolutely. When the social media like Facebook and stuff has really brought together people in an almost updated non-violent protest fashion, much in line with Dr. Martin Luther King and Gandhi.
But they were violent.
No. The regimes became violent against them. The Gandhi quote is, first they ignore you, then they mock you, then they fight you, and then you win.
I'm in the Tea Party, so...
I've seen you speak for the Tea Party.
Yes, but we're not violent. We don't even leave litter. Okay, so how come Van...
You're not violent?
No.
You don't think you promote violence?
How come Van Jones is promoting violence for you guys?
And so the guy's asking her now to take a photo.
How come Van Jones is asking you guys to be like, jeez, save America?
I don't know how good I did.
All right, let's try it again.
Thanks for playing, guys.
Yeah, that works. That's fine.
Good?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, how come Van Jones is encouraging violence?
You've got me. I'm not familiar with that, Van Jones.
You know Van Jones is a communist.
I'm not familiar with Van Jones. I can't speak on it.
You're not familiar with him?
You stumped me on one question out of 20. I think I did pretty good.
Oh,
here we go. And of course, she's now showing like just how crazy these people are. End the war, tax the rich. That's insane. Wait a second. Here we go. It's more. Oh, God. There's one more question that she's got about. We're talking, how do we end the deficit? End the wars, tax the rich. That's crazy. Van Jones is a communist.
They don't have smart brains.
Ask me if I believe that Obama's waging a racial war?
Yeah. Victoria. Yeah. He said the police acted
over the Harvard professor who arrested him.
Obama said the police acted
Based on that one comment, you're surmising that
he let the Black Panthers not be punished for voting.
Oh God, it's just like, it's literally, if you do, if you had like a right-wing lunacy sort of sound effect board. You just keep it. Wait, I got to pull her sound. All right, folks, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to be talking to Matt Taibbi in just one moment. Sorry about the Victoria Jackson, folks. I just, oh God, I could watch that over and over and over and over and over again.
But then you might lose your smart brains.
No. You want everybody to look the same and have a same house in the racial war, Black Panther, stupid cops, Van Jones,
cheese,
communist. We'll be right back after this, folks.
It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day it's fine and next it's black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? Decisions bugging me.
Decision they molest us.
If you don't want me, set me free.
Set me careless, keep your mind.
Exactly whom I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?
All right, folks, we are back on the Majority Report. Sam Cedar on the phone. From Rolling Stone magazine, Matt Taibbi, he may just have fell down the wormhole, folks. I told him he's got to watch this Victoria Jackson video. Were you not aware that Victoria Jackson's a sort of violent right-wing, no, violent is the wrong word, hilarious right-wing sort of provocateur, I guess?
I was not aware of that.
Oh.
That's very disappointing.
Oh, dude. You don't know
actually,
what.
When I was really, really young, I actually very, very briefly thought she was kind of cute, actually. So
back in the Saturday Night Live days, but poor Victoria, something happened to her, and she's on the God Squad, and also gets all her talking points from Glenn Beck, and it's just fantastic. You got to watch that video. She's come to New York to visit Occupy Wall Street and hand out Jesus pamphlets. And
it's awesome.
It's beyond awesome. It is. It really is. There is a theory that she is in fact Andy Kaufman.
That was just what I was thinking just now. Is she going to start wrestling dudes now?
He's just come back in so many different forms.
Maybe it is. Yeah, that's right. That's right. She was in the entire time. That's really funny.
It's possible. I don't know. We got to do a little more investigation. I'm thinking of having her on the show and ask her that. But all right, let's get to the topic at hand, shall we? I know the answer to this, but give me what do you think about Occupy Wall Street?
I love it. I think when it first started, I was one of those obnoxious people who went out in public and said, "Hey, it's great, but I wish they had a more focused message." But I'm kind of seen the light since that first week. The movement's getting huge. And I think the fact that it doesn't have a single set of demands or a single set of leaders is really freaking people out in a way that I think is really positive. So I'm all about it now. I love it.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about those demands, because I saw your piece. I guess it was last week, but on that. But you know, it's funny because we've been talking for years on we first had you back on the old Majority Report, and you know, and I've been reading you for years, and to a certain extent, you and I have tracked similarly, at least in terms of dispositionally. You know, there was a time, I think, where you were writing where you would have had a real problem with sort of like the stylistic quality of this. And I remember back in the Obama days, I remember when we spoke and you had sort of bought into the hope and changey thing that we all had. And you were just as shocked about it as anybody that you had done that, I think. And, you know, there is a quality to Occupy Wall Street that I think years ago I would have taken issue with. But now I find incredibly refreshing and really sort of almost to be the only answer at this point.
Yeah, no, I absolutely years ago would have had a problem with this. I remember during the Republican National Convention way back in 2004, I wrote a piece criticizing the protest leaders because they expressly instructed all the protesters to express their individuality and dress differently and not behave in any kind of unified way. When I thought, you know, the best way to scare people on the other side would be a kind of unified show of force, you know, everybody sort of marching in step and not, you know, banging on drums and walking on stilts and all those things. But I think what's going on now on Occupy Wall Street is that it's becoming a place where people who have all different kinds of frustrations with the current economic system are all coming together. And the inability of other, you know, the people on the other side to really nail it down and say this is who these people are and this is what they want has made it impossible to combat. And I think it's brilliant. I mean, it's really working.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to figure out, like, you know, why it is that I had, you know, not quite the same disposition in 2004, but similar enough that why this is resonating and with me personally, and I think the notion of it resonating in the country, I think, is easier in some ways for me to understand, because frankly, you know, when you have people who are willing to take themselves out of what we all perceive as our comfort zone, when you have people who are willing to literally sleep out in a park for an extended period of time, I think that basically says to society, you have no leverage over us. You can't take away our job. It's gone. You can't take away our home. It's underwater or we've lost it.
Right.
And you can't take away our comfort because we've already done that. And
right.
It makes it, there is no leverage that society has with people like that.
Yeah, no, I think that, yeah, there's a situation here where what these people are protesting, it isn't so much that something specific, it's not that they want some kind of particular concrete change. They just don't want to be part of this entire system anymore. They want something new. And just as you say, you know, in the old days, people would have been afraid to step out of line because you're afraid you're going to lose your house, you're going to lose your job, you're going to get your credit rating's going to get screwed up, and you're never going to be able to fix that. You're never going to get out of your student loans. People are just like, screw it at this point. You know, I mean, there's no leverage anymore. There's no way to scare people back in the line anymore because it's the game is already up. You know, I mean. So I totally agree with you.
Do you think for that there is also a wider acceptance among people that there is a problem, a systemic problem? I mean, you know, part of the reason why, you know, one would argue back in 2004, like everybody should be clean for Gene because this is the way within the context of the system to win. There seems to be a broader acceptance of there really is no way to win within the context of the system now. It's so rigged in so many different ways that the old rules just don't make any sense anymore.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. You know, back in 2004, 2003, what was the big issue? The big issue was trying to, you know, not have a war in Iraq and you know, a big enough show of force on the other side could have achieved that. They could have, you know, if they had moved 20 Democratic elected officials here or there, they could have probably prevented that Iraq war authorization, and they could have stopped that war, and that would have been a way to work within the system and prevent that, at least, you know. But this is something, what people are protesting here is a sort of a radical, it's the entire organization of society, which is really set up to enhance the power of a very small group of people and deprive everybody else of you know, equal footing. And that's not something that you're going to be able to change by, you know, with a few votes here or there. It's something much more broad and radical than that needs to be addressed. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's two different questions that you're dealing with.
And so let's talk about this the piece that you wrote a couple of weeks ago, sort of outlining, you know, giving some advice to the occupiers. And you list five different sort of, I guess, policy
talking points.
Yeah, talking points, policy changes. Outline those for us and tell me, do you still sort of subscribe to that notion? Because there's a piece out today by Josh Harkinson, who's been doing some very good reporting of Occupy Wall Street. He's from Mother Jones, and he's talking about the that the demands group. You know, there are, as you know, there are different working groups at Occupy Wall Street. Mm. The demands working group is starting to is today now starting to raise the issue of a demand essentially to create a more or less direct federal government in raising new revenue and basically direct hiring to create 25 million new jobs. Now, there's competing demands groups within the people at Zuccotti Park, and it remains to be seen whether or not this demand can be sort of embraced by the whole group because, of course, it is a very disparate group of people. But let's talk about the five demands that you had talked about and whether or not you still sort of feel like this is something they should be coalescing against, stuff this specific.
Yeah, I mean, basically what happened was after these protests got started, you know, of course they're called Occupy Wall Street, so, and that's what I cover is Wall Street, and a whole bunch of us who are either journalists who cover, you know, high finance and corruption on Wall Street, or activists, you know, trying to get certain laws changed. And we were all kind of talking to each other when
I know Andrew Breitbart told me that you were talking to each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's all kind of come out since then. But we were trying to figure out, you know, what would be something that you know, that these people would ask for if when the time came for them to have demands. And of course, nobody asked us for this advice. We were just sort of batting this around amongst ourselves. But the one thing that we can all, I think, agree on, I mean, every one of these people who've been covering Wall Street for years, is that you got to break up the too big to fail banks. You know, the Citigroup, Goldman, Bank of America, you know, all of these companies, Morgan Stanley, they've gotten too huge, and they now, you know, they have the implicit support of the government because everybody knows that if they screw up or do something corrupt again, that we have to bail them out. And that's a completely unhealthy situation, and everybody recognizes that has to change. Now, obviously, the movement wants to do, OWS wants to change the world. They want to do, you know, make much more fundamental and radical changes than that. But I think all of us who are kind of in that community of Wall Street activists and reporters, we all think that, you know, that would be a major radical change just in the way Wall Street does business that they could actually get. I mean, you know, there is some support among politicians in Washington for doing this, And I think a big enough show of strength, you know, in calling for that, they could actually do that. They could break up those companies if they tried.
And then you also suggest pay for your own bailouts.
Yeah, and then I kind of listed a few other small. I mean, look, there's 1,000 things that people right. could ask for in terms of reforming Wall Street. There's so many things that have gotten out of control, from, you know, not allowing the ratings agencies to take money from the same people they're rating, or, you know, to you know, having some regulation over the derivatives market, to you know, changes in how commodities are priced and all that. But I just I picked a few things that were so obvious and indefensible that you know, that they would be good talking points. So, you know, one of those was should be a transaction tax on Wall Street, because this addresses two things. Number one, it would raise money to pay for all the bank bailouts. So if you put like a fraction of a cent tax on every trade of a derivative or a stock or a bond, you could raise enough money to pay for the bailouts we've already had and the ones we're probably going to have in the future. But the other thing it would do is that it would slow down all this kind of relentless trading back and forth, these computerized trading platforms that we have. Because what was Wall Street supposed to do? Its job is supposed to be to invest money in companies and let them grow, and that's not what they do anymore. They are essentially gigantic day traders who are gambling on tiny movements in the market from second to second, and that is a hugely destabilizing activity, and we have to get them out of the habit of doing that. So that was why I proposed that.
I mean, isn't that sort of like in the broader sense? And, you know, early on, when there wasn't really anybody at least the mainstream media didn't know who to talk to in Occupy Wall Street. You know, I was going on a couple of shows and I was basically saying, like, you know, what do they want? Well, they're occupying Wall Street. They're not occupying the Natural Museum of History. You know, they're not occupying Central Park. They're occupying Wall Street, and they're doing that because there's obviously a problem that Wall Street signifies. And at the end of the day, it really is. It seems to me that the omnibus thing that these people are railing against is essentially the implications of our plutocracy, that we have a small amount of people who have a widely disparate control over the resources of our country, and they not only have too much money in terms of wealth inequality, but they now have a power inequality, and our government is simply not functioning in the way that it should be, and there's a breakdown of the social contract because of that. At the very least, Wall Street signifies that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that's the root complaint of everybody down there is. You know, you can look at it from a number of angles, and you just see the facts that jump out at you. You know, what were the 400,000 people were forcibly deported last year in the United States, but they were still we still don't have a single person who's gone to jail for any of the crimes related, the financial crimes to the crisis of 2008. That just tells you that there's a fundamental inequity in the power structure in this country. We have a regulatory system that is completely captured by Wall Street on the one hand, and then we have a gigantic law enforcement apparatus that exists entirely to bust people for, you know, taking drugs and crossing borders. I think people are upset about that. They're upset about the fact that Wall Street companies get a bailout when they screw up, when they make bad decisions, and they are irresponsible. Their credit rating doesn't get ruined. They instead get a government bailout, and they get to keep their bonuses. And while everybody else, if you miss a payment on your Gap card, you're not going to get a loan for the next 5 years. So people understand that it's a two-tiered society, and they're upset about that. They want all of us to live in the same country and have the same rules. And I think that's at the root of all these complaints.
And on some level, too, I mean, the thing I think that most people don't really understand is that there is things that the government could be doing. Now, granted, we have political gridlock, but there's things that the administration could be doing unilaterally. There are things that the Fed could be doing. I mean, we have now the IMF is actually – we have Goldman Sachs. And the IMF. The IMF is backing off of austerity. Goldman Sachs is actually asking the Fed to target for more inflation at this point. because everybody is so concerned about the economy. But it just seems like we can't get the thing jump-started. And this is a political, it seems to me a political breakdown, because there's somebody who just has too much of a wrench, essentially, to put into the system to protect their own interests. And so let's talk about this in terms of the latest piece you wrote, which is why Occupy Wall Street is bigger than left and right. Talk to me about that, because I have some sympathy to that perspective, but I also have some skepticism.
Okay. Well, all I was really saying, you know, when I had that crazy incident where some weirdo from Andrew Breitbart's sites went out and stole a bunch of emails. I was on an email list with people like Dylan Radigan and Glenn Greenwald.
We were
all just kind of talking about, you know, it showed up in the media on Breitbart's site as this conspiracy of leftist reporters to marionette the Occupy Wall Street movement, where, I mean, it wasn't anything like that. And, you know, to me, this was just, you know, an example of the kind of thing that's going to happen now, where there are going to be these attempts to kind of ram Occupy Wall Street into the usual old narrative of, right, you know, lefties on the one side, you know, Noam Chomsky and MoveOn and Barack Obama are all going to be on one side, and the Tea Party and Rush Limbaugh are going to be on the other side. And that's the narrative that everybody's comfortable with, and our commercial media has been covering for years. And that would serve to defuse a lot of the energy of this movement if they could break it down into those traditional categories. And I just don't think that's naturally the way this is should work, because I think the reality is the description of the 99% versus 1% is mostly true. There's a small group of people who are oligarchic powers in this country, and then there's kind of everybody else, and that includes all the people in the Tea Party who are on the other side of the fence. And if people come around to that realization, they realize that it's really all of us against, you know, that small group of people, then the game's going to be up, and that's why there's going to be this effort to try to tell people it's not like that it's really, you know, the same left-right thing.
Yeah, I mean,
but you think otherwise. I mean,
I agree with that to a certain extent. I mean, you know, I had this argument a little bit with Radigan on his program, so I can see that you guys have been in complete coordination, and you, through some type of mind meld, you're also controlling all those people on down at the Liberty Plaza. Of course, Breitbart is definitely onto something. I mean, who would have known that you supported this thing except for your writing?
I know. What a scoop, right?
Yes. I mean, he is really hurting for blockbuster stories. You know, the latest was like Dylan Radigan is definitely interested in Occupy Wall Street. You can't watch Dylan Radigan for 2 minutes without him, you know, like talking about it. But apparently, you know, just actually watching the show was just not enough of a scoop. But, you know, like because and I have this argument with Radigan to a certain extent. I agree with you that there's definitely pressure both from the electoral left and electoral right, and the establishment left and the establishment right, as it were, to either use the energy to promote a certain electoral outcome or certain policy outcomes one way or the other. I mean, I was down in that first week, I think, or second week of Occupy Wall Street. I was down at the Campaign for America's Future, Take Back America's Dream, whatever the name of that conference was. I couldn't quite even figure it out. And literally, Occupy Wall Street had sucked all the energy out of there. And it was fascinating. I mean, it was fascinating in that respect, because on one hand, you have an establishment attempt to create a movement, and then you have an actual movement that is promoting some of those same ideas. Mm-hmm. At its heart, though, when you talk about, regulating in such a way that banks aren't too big to fail, when you talk about, or when Radigan talks about insisting on capital requirements for banks, or mm-hmm. when we talk about maybe debt relief for student loans, or we talk about cram downs for people who are in underwater mortgages, all of the solutions to this income disparity necessarily involve, essentially, a, for lack of a better term, a left of perspective, a leftist perspective on government actually taking its power and essentially fulfilling the social contract and main and decreasing the excesses of capitalism. And if you want to call it capitalism, really, frankly, it's profiteerism at this point. And the solutions, it seems to me, are on a left paradigm. The problem is one that I think is recognized.
I don't agree with that at all. I see what you're saying, but I would probably agree with almost all the solutions that you're talking about. But I think there's a lot of area where both the left and right can agree about things being wrong on Wall Street.
Absolutely.
And can also agree on the solutions, because in addition to a lot of the greed and excess that's gone on Wall Street, there's been a serious problem with the government having too much influence in supporting these companies.
Agree.
Even people on the left can agree capitalism doesn't work if half of Wall Street is state supported. I think you have to. I'm against the bailouts, and I think most of the Tea Partiers were against the bailouts too. I think if companies are screwed up and they're corrupt and they rip people off, they should be allowed to go out of business. And that's not a left complaint. That's just a capitalist complaint. I think that the notion that companies can bail themselves out of trouble by borrowing from 0% from the Fed endlessly and then, you know, taking all that government cash, free government cash, and lending it back to us at 3 or 4 or 5% or 20% in case of credit cards, that's not capitalism. That's socialism. We can all start just by ending that stuff, and then we can get to the problem of left or right solutions to the rest of it.
I mean, I agree with that. Our government has done things that I would disagree with. In other words, government. There's a difference between saying that government has taken the wrong action and saying that the government should not be allowed to take any action. And
true, that's true.
That is the area in which, you know, I think is fundamentally problematic. It was the repeal of Glass-Steagall and the repeal and the lack of fervor by government regulators that led to this in many respects. And so it was a failure of government to actually intervene properly rather than the notion of government intervention that led to this. We can say that they are the way that they addressed the problem. And I think there is an argument that we needed some type of bank bailout for the financial system. But the real problem is, and I said to Radigan yesterday, he said, you know, they were blackmailing us. Yes, that's true. We paid the blackmail, but we never got the pictures. You know, like we, right. You know, we, it's one thing to pay that blackmail, but it's another thing to say, we're going to pay the blackmail and let you do it to us again. As opposed
right.
to saying, okay,
right.
we've paid you, you've made an argument, which I think there is an argument that the financial system would have crashed, that all the proper elements of that you acknowledge that Wall Street functions as a way of disseminating risk, as a way of providing capital for people who have cash flow problems, all of those elements which are important, we need a financial system. The problem is that the financial system went unchecked. And they were allowed to do things that the system was not built for. They were allowed to just go on to full on. The means became the ends for our financial system, rather than we've lost sight of why we have a financial system.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I would agree that the solution to most of these problems is we do need to restore regulation and. Capital requirements, and the government definitely has to have a hand in regulating the entire economy to prevent a lot of the excesses that went on. I'm just saying that there's a starting point
right.
where both left and right are going to agree. Nobody out there wants their tax dollars to go to pay for Lloyd Blankfein's bonus. I mean, right. I think that's a simple thing that every American can agree on, is that, you know, if you screw up, and make catastrophic financial decisions that are going to have ramifications for the entire country should not be supported by my tax dollars at the expense of firemen and teachers and other ordinary people. And that's just a basic starting point. Once we take care of stuff like that, like let's not have the public paying for the mistakes of these idiots, then we can have the argument about how to properly regulate the economy. But just enforcing the law, preventing crime, jailing people who commit crime, and not using public money to pay for bailouts, I think that's something everybody can agree on.
So job number one is essentially end the plutocracy. And then let's have a debate then as to how we rebuild the pick up the pieces.
Right, because ultimately this both sides have an implicit complaint, right? The complaint on the so-called left is that corporate corruption is out of control and that these private companies need to be stopped, and the complaint on the right is that the government is out of control and that it enabled all this irresponsible behavior, and both sides are right. Both of those complaints are completely valid, mm-hmm. and I think the starting point has to be separate government and Wall Street, and that unhealthy aspects of that relationship, and that would be greatly restorative for the entire economy to get to a situation where, look, right now, if you're a small regional bank in this country, you have to pay more to borrow money than Goldman Sachs or Bank of America does, because investors know that Goldman Sachs and Bank of America have the implicit support of the federal government and that they're always going to get paid back if they lend those companies money. They don't know that if, your local credit union is trying to borrow money. So that's a market corrupting reality. That means that these state-supported banks have an implicit market advantage over everybody else,
right?
And that's not capitalism. Nobody thinks that's fair, on the left or the right. And I think we can fix that.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I mean, it's the functional equivalent of two people going to rent an apartment with the same meager income, but one has daddy cosign.
Right, exactly.
And it's obviously it's always going to go to that renter. This is a debate that I have with libertarians where they say that government has been corrupted by corporate money. We agree. And then they say, and so the solution is to limit the size of government. And I say, well, but if you limit the size of government, all you're going to do is create a vacuum that corporations are going to fill. What needs to happen is that we need to have a bright line between corporations and government, and government needs to impose that line, because that's why we form governments in some way, both to promote commercial activity and to make sure that it remains a fair playing field, so that it doesn't just serve the interests of corporations. Corporations are licensed by government to essentially help people. And when they become a force that's not helping people, and I think there's a lot of reasons why we can find for that, not the least of which is CEOs and their board of directors have these cottage industries on their own stock options that sort of create a perverse incentive structure for them. But that's where the rub comes. And my one concern just about – it's one thing to take this out of electoral politics. It's another to sort of – lose where the solutions are on an ideological spectrum. Not that I really care that they're labeled. It's just that I think, after the revolution, you want to make sure that the right people are that the right ideas are coming out of it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm on your side when it comes to what those solutions probably are. I just think that
it's too early for
you. Got to learn. Got to learn to crawl before you can walk, and when it comes to fixing the problems that we have, my idea is address the stuff that everybody agrees on first, and then let's have that debate later. I mean, just another example, right now, and this was another one of my things in the article, if you run a hedge fund, if you're John Paulson or George Soros or Stevie Cohen, your tax rate is 15%. And because your income is called carried interest, it's not called income. Now, nobody thinks that's fair. There isn't a single person out there, except for a guy who runs a hedge fund, who thinks it's fair that a billionaire should pay half the tax rate of a teacher or a fireman or a policeman. It doesn't make any sense at all. So I think pretty much everybody can agree on that. Now, the people on the right would probably go one step further and say there shouldn't be any income taxes at all. But we can have that debate after we get to making sure that everybody pays the same tax rate to begin with. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, I think there are a lot of intermediate steps that we could all get to. And, you know, I personally think a lot of these problems will go away when you fix some of the more obvious issues. And that, you know, there are a lot of people on Wall Street who would tell you that there's an enormous amount of money and creative energy and entrepreneurial spirit out there waiting to sort of rebuild this country if they could only get all this stuff out of the way. And I'm not sure that they're not right. You know, I mean, I think we have to, it might be a good thing to find out, but we won't get there until we end this unhealthy plutocracy that we have right now, which is this weird, not really capitalist, not really socialist environment that we're in.
And I know you got to go, but what? Give me a sense. Do you have any, where do you predict this is going?
You know, I have no idea. Right. I'm so amazed because it just keeps getting bigger and demanding more and more attention. I think that there's going to be a point at which, let me just back up for a second. You know, I've been covering this for years, and I go around the country, and I've been seeing, you know, out of foreclosure meetings by foreclosure activists, for instance, you know, groups of people who've lost their houses, and you know, those people are furious. I mean, they're so angry. If you go to any foreclosure court in the country, you can see the rage that's there. And I think there's a moment at which the Occupy Wall Street protest is either going to reach all those people or they're not going to reach all those people. You know, I think there's going to become a line, and there's going to be a line in the sand where they're either going to reach all those victims of middle American victims of Wall Street or they're not. And that to me is going to be the big test. And, you know, whether it becomes this massive popular movement or whether it remains a relatively small thing, then we'll see what happens. If they do reach those people, then there's no limit to what they can accomplish, because there's just so much political anger out there that it will overwhelm, I think, the politicians in Washington.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And in fact, there's new data out, I think, just today, suggesting that foreclosures are on the rise again. Delinquencies are back up. This is according to filings by Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and J.P. Morgan Chase. And so I think we're going to see more of this. I think there's going to be an ebb and flow to this, but maybe the weather will slow things down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling by next spring, by April of next year, this thing is going to be massively massive. I don't know how else to put it. I think by hell or high water, we may see some ebb and flows, but by next spring, I think it's just going to be crazy.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think you're right. I think when the weather's going to slow it down a little bit, but when it starts getting warm again next year and the election season starts roaring around too, it's all going to. I feel like a 1968 type of situation is happening here, and maybe even more than that. So it'll be really interesting to watch.
We're all soixante huitards now.
Huitards.
All right.
Speak for yourself.
Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone Magazine, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, Sam. Thanks a lot, man.
All right folks. Now we will head into the better half of the program. You got 7 minutes of bonus today. 7 minutes of Matt Taibbi bonus. Folks, become a member of this program. I know I say it every day. We had no new members yesterday. Zero. We need to have three a day. We had zero yesterday. That means we need six today. So if you can become a member, if you can afford it, please. We have thousands of people who listen to the show for free every day. Don't make me make it like 2 or 3 days a week free. Don't make me do that. Become a member today at majority.fm. Also, you can support the show by going to podcastawards.com, voting every day. You can vote every day for us as People's Choice or Best Politics News Podcast. You can donate your accounts at donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm. You can buy coffee at justcoffee.coop. It's a co-op. It's all fair trade coffee. So people are paid throughout the entire system for the work that they do. Whether it's the guy picking it, the guy distributing it, or the workers who work at justcoffee.coop because they own the company. And you get a 10% discount with the coupon code MAJORITY. Also, if you buy crap through Amazon, buy it through our link at majority.fm. You can bookmark the link. We get a kickback. Therefore, you're taking money from these corporations and giving it to me, which is really, it's poetry. Got a lot of stories in the better half of the program. Stick around. You can give us a call, 646-257-3920. It is 1220 Eastern. Call us now, 646-257-3920. We'll be right back after this.